From WBUR Boston, I'm Bob Oakes, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. A raucous debate broke out on the House floor Friday night as Republicans and Democrats voted on a resolution for immediate troop withdrawal in Iraq. The heat in the House was fueled by Thursday's major statement by Congressman John Murtha. The Pennsylvania Democrat and veteran military hawk called for the withdrawal of U.S. troops from Iraq over the next 6 months. Friday night on the House floor, Republican Congressman Gene Schmidt of Ohio touched off an angry exchange by speaking, she said, on behalf of a U.S. Marine.
He asked me to send Congress a message, stay the course. He also asked me to send Congressman Murtha a message that cowards cut and run, Marines never do. Danny and the rest of America and the world want the assurance from this body that we will see this through.
The House will be in order. The House will be in order.
Democratic Congressman George Miller of California quickly came to John Murtha's defense.
That man is out of order.
That man is a hero of this nation. You know it, and the whole nation knows it.
The Republican proposed resolution eventually failed in a late night vote 403-3, but the political rhetoric has raised the question of withdrawal from Iraq to a new prominence, and all of Washington is weighing the argument that Democratic Congressman John Murtha made last Thursday.
The United States and coalition troops have done all they can in Iraq, but it's time for a change in direction. Our military is suffering. The future of our country is at risk. We cannot continue on the present course.
This hour, On Point, Congressman John Murtha's call for withdrawal, the arguments for and against, and what it would mean for Iraq. You can join the conversation. What do you think? Is it time to recommit to staying in Iraq or to seriously think about when to bring U.S. troops home? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. First, to Washington, Mark Mazzetti is Pentagon correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. He's been following the debate. Hello, Mark.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Mark, what's the bitter debate we saw on Friday continued over the weekend on the political talk show signal about congressional support for the administration's handling of Iraq?
Well, I think the most important thing that it does, starting with Congressman Murtha last Thursday, is it forces the Democrats to eventually have a position on the Iraq war. You know, as we've seen over the last at least year, Democrats have struggled about how tough to be on the Bush administration over Iraq, whether to call for withdrawal, when to really push for U.S. troops to slowly begin the pulling out of Iraq. What Murtha did was establish at least a benchmark, and it's certainly at this point still a very extreme benchmark, but it is a benchmark that Democrats will begin to work off of at the end of, toward the end of this year and into next year, as we've seen. You know, the violence hasn't gone down, and so, you know, Democrats certainly will have more ammunition going forward.
Well, tell us about the Murtha benchmark. Cut through the spin. What is Congressman Murtha proposing exactly for U.S. troop withdrawal?
Well, he's saying that basically for the U.S. to get out almost immediately, as soon as is practicable for the Pentagon to do so, and to keep a sort of small, quick reaction force in the around Iraq to, you know, use U.S. troops in the case of an emergency. But he's saying in no uncertain terms that the U.S. should be getting out of Iraq and almost immediately. And it's certainly much, much further than any Democrat had pushed up to that point. Up to that point, and as we saw earlier in the week, the Democrats had talked about sort of a phased withdrawal that, you know, established a sort of guided timetable over the next year or so. But even that they couldn't get through the Senate. What Murtha did was really push it a lot farther than any of them had been able to do it up to that point.
Well, there's been a lot of support for Murtha from the Democrats in defending him from the criticism he's taken from Republicans and from the Bush White House in the days since he made that statement. But what is there in the way for support of what he proposes?
Well, as we saw on Friday night, the eventual debate was overwhelmingly against him. And that's why the Republicans pulled that move by forcing a vote Friday night to sort of get everyone on record about what Congressman Murtha was saying. So certainly there's very little support in Washington and on Congress for doing exactly what Murtha was saying.
So what next?
Well,
for the Democrats.
Well, what next is that they will, I think, become a little bolder in pushing the administration to establish a timetable. not a immediate withdrawal, but to set immediate benchmarks. So, like, you know, 6 months into next year, we should have this many troops in Iraq. By the end of next year, we should have this many troops in Iraq. Up to this point, they've been really hesitant to do so. And with what Murtha said Thursday and with the sort of momentum building among Democrats that they've got to stake out a position, that's probably the direction they're going to go in.
Donald Rumsfeld made the rounds on the Sunday TV talk shows. Dick Cheney, the vice president, will be speaking at the American Enterprise Institute in Washington later today. What's the case they're making for staying the course in Iraq?
Well, they say it would be absolutely disastrous to pull out. If we follow the Murtha plan, essentially the U.S. troops would leave Iraq to a not-yet-capable Iraqi army that couldn't basically hold off a potential civil war between Sunni and Shia in Iraq, and that would destabilize not only Iraq but the entire Middle East. So they are saying essentially that if we do what Murtha says, the United States itself will be less secure. So, you know, you saw Rumsfeld all over talk shows yesterday saying that, you know, the current plan is a good one. You have to stay the course because it's not just about Iraq, but it's about, you know, the security of the United States as well. But, you know, as one of my colleagues put it, you know, Murtha really is sort of the ghost of Christmas future about for the Democrats, because he's going to be hanging around and Democrats are going to be using his language going forward, if not to support it, at least to sort of calibrate their own positions against.
Quick question, quick answer. Do you see the possibility of any middle ground, both sides coming to terms on this somehow?
Well, you will see, I think, next year, the administration, if they're hearing the message not only from Democrats but Republicans loud and clear, is that they've got to explain their strategy and they've got to explain where they want to be by this point next year. As we know, next year is an election year for, you know, off-year congressional elections. They need to sort of establish to some extent benchmarks about, you know, by the elections, by the end of next year, we want to have enough Iraqi troops trained so there can be a subsequent drawdown of U.S. troops. So I think the Bush administration will get the message, at least, to better explain their position.
Mark Mazzetti, Pentagon correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. Thank you very much. Joining us now from Seattle is General Barry McCaffrey, former commander-in-chief of the U.S. Armed Forces Southern Command. When he retired in 1996, he was the most highly decorated and youngest four-star general in the Army. He led the 24th Mechanized Infantry Division in the 1991 Gulf War, served two combat tours in South Vietnam as a platoon leader. General McCaffrey, thank you.
Good to be with you, Bob.
Joining us in the studio is Barry Posen, professor of political science at MIT, where he's affiliated with the Security Studies Program. He has a forthcoming article in the January issue of Boston Review on disengagement strategy and is the author of Inadvertent Escalation, Conventional War and Nuclear Risks. Professor Posen, hello.
Good morning.
General McCaffrey, to you first, how do you interpret John Murtha's call for immediate withdrawal?
Well, I think it resonated certainly with American people, more than half of whom now believe the introduction of U.S. military forces in Iraq was a mistake. I think there's a widespread disenchantment with Secretary Rumsfeld and much of the Pentagon leadership. They've been disingenuous as their initial egregious misjudgments have unraveled on them. Now, having said that, you know, Murtha is one classic fine man, very experienced, very respected. This Congressman Gene Schmidt's vitriolic attack on him was outrageous. Having said that, I think in a substantive way, it doesn't make any sense to really pose an alternative immediate withdrawal. That's simply not going to happen. It would be irresponsible. But it's a beginning, as Mark Mazzetti said, of an intensified debate. We've got to have more credible communication with the American people that the strategy we're using is correct. You know, this war is $6 billion a month and essentially 18,000 killed and wounded in the armed forces. So it sets up quite nicely what will be an increasingly divisive debate in the coming months.
All right. Barry Posen, to you. What did you hear in Congressman Murtha's statement? Is he making a case to cut and run, as some Republicans have said, or is he making a valid case for withdrawal?
Well, cut and run is a polemical statement that's used by supporters of the current effort to try and discourage debate. So I don't think cut and run is really the right characterization. Congressman Murtha's statements on this matter are obviously very heartfelt. He spent a good deal of time visiting with some of these 18,000 not so much killed but wounded from the war in the hospitals in Washington. And he's clearly very, very touched by what's happened to them. And I think he's developed a deep fear that these people are being killed and wounded on the basis of a bad or non-existent strategy. The exercise feels futile. He does not see a light at the end of the tunnel, and therefore he wants to see what I'm sure he considers to be enormous human waste end. And I think that's what's driving him to make the kind of recommendation that he's making. Now, he's not the only person to suggest this. There are others who have suggested immediate withdrawal. General Bill Odom, retired general, has also suggested immediate withdrawal. And people should understand what immediate means in this context. You know, you can't pack up 150,000 American troops and leave tomorrow. If you decided to leave today, it would take at least 6 months to get them all out.
Now, that was actually my next question. Could the U.S. be out in 6 months, even if the political will was there to be out?
My sense in talking to people and just trying to treat it deductively is that 6 months is a reasonable timeline for getting out. It typically takes the United States military about 6 months to get into a place with a large force. I'm guessing it'll take them about 6 months to get out if they have the orders to do so. Some people say they could do it faster. Some say a little slower. But I think 6 months is a good guess.
General McCaffrey, less than a minute to the break. How about you on that question? If we have the political will to do so, and it doesn't seem like we do, could we be out in 6 months?
Oh, sure. Yeah, no, I think, you know, in terms of an emergency withdrawal, they'd start blowing things in place and literally be out in 90 days. But it's not an option. It would be an irresponsible thing to do, and it's simply not going to happen politically.
General McCaffrey, Barry Posen, please stay with us. We're talking this hour about the debate over whether to withdraw U.S. troops from Iraq. You can join the conversation. Do you agree with Congressman Murtha when he says it's time to bring the troops home? 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Bob Oakes, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Bob Oakes, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about the debate in Washington over whether to pull U.S. troops out of Iraq. Here's Democratic Congressman John Murtha of Pennsylvania speaking yesterday on NBC's Meet the Press about why he believes Iraqis can take care of themselves without civil war erupting if U.S. forces leave.
I'm absolutely convinced that we're making no progress at all. And I've been complaining for 2 years that there's an overly optimistic, illusionary process going on here. They keep trying to measure Iraqi troops by our standards. They don't even need to meet our standards.
Democratic Congressman John Murtha. Our guest this hour in the studio is Barry Posen, professor of political science at MIT. And on the line with us, General Barry McCaffrey, former commander-in-chief of the U.S. Armed Forces Southern Command. Join the conversation at 1-800-423-TALK. Barry Posen, let me ask you, first of all, give us your version of a realistic plan for disengagement in Iraq. The thumbnail sketch.
Yeah, well, the thumbnail sketch is this. I think that it's reasonable to get most of American ground forces, if not all, out of Iraq in 18 months. And to do that, we need to have realistic political goals, and we need to have reasonable military and political strategies. The first thing we have to do is alter our political goals and make them more specific. I think the best thing we can get in Iraq is a weak federal or confederal state, not a unitary state, not a functioning liberal democracy, not a multi-ethnic democracy, but some form of government that gives the various groups in Iraq a great deal of autonomy about their own government.
But not a partition state.
Not a pure partition, because I think a single Iraqi state is better for the stability of the region and is actually better for the security of all of the groups. Right. So that's one. Second, I think General McCaffrey and others are right. There are some gaps that remain in the government security organization, and those gaps need to be filled. The United States decided to build combat infantry battalions first and left everything else to do second. Those problems are being worked, and as Congressman Murtha implied, divisions and headquarters and defense bureaucracies do not need to be created to American standards or A-plus standards. C-plus standards are just fine.
Well, wait, stop there. What is a C-plus? Plus standard. What is a C plus standard? What is the standard that Iraqi troops would have to meet to have our full confidence to keep Iraq under control once we leave?
Well, I guess it depends on your definition of control, right? My view of American goals is we have very limited objectives in Iraq objectively. Basically, we don't want Al-Qaeda to come to power in that country, and we don't want the Ba'ath to come back to power in that country.
And we don't want it to become a terrorist state beyond Al-Qaeda.
Well, if that goes with keeping Al-Qaeda from coming to power in the country. And since the Kurds and the Shiites outnumber the Sunnis by about 4-1 in the country, it's unlikely that the Ba'ath can return to power, and it's unlikely that Al-Qaeda can win. So essentially, we have to bring these troops up to a defensive standard where they can defend Baghdad and defend points south with a little help from the Americans, air power, special forces, advice, weapons, and the like. We're not going to be able to train an Iraqi army that can subdue Anbar province, that can subdue the Sunnis, that can bend them to the will of some new Iraqi state, that can make them change their political desires for autonomy or for power. The Iraqi military that we're training isn't going to be able to do that. But note, the American military has been there for 30 months, and it has not succeeded in doing it. And I don't think many people believe that it's going to succeed in doing it if it stays another 30 months.
General McCaffrey, weigh in here. What's your take on Barry Posen's proposal or plan or outline? And what's your version? Do you think do you think it's too early for the U.S. to even talk about it?
Well, for starters, I've never heard such an unbroken string of common sense statements about Iraq in the last couple, 3 years. And too bad Professor Posen isn't the Secretary of Defense. I mean that quite sincerely. I'm not even sure this is all that complicated. From the start, I thought entry into Iraq and taking down the Saddam regime was probably a good goal. It was clearly a war of choice. It was executed with unbelievable bad judgment, insufficient troops, no follow-on effort to consolidate some kind of a stable Iraqi regime. It's simply beyond belief that we have managed to wreck this operation in such an astonishing way right at the beginning. Right now, I think it's largely on track. We got a considerable number of troops in there, 160,000, a good ambassador, Khalilzad, first-rate military leaders, John Abizaid, our, CENTCOM commander, Stanford fellow, Harvard master's degree, fluent in Arabic and German and Italian, a Ranger battalion commander at heart. So I actually think largely what we're doing is likely to work in the coming, I'd say, 24 months, to wit, stand up a loose federal state, create an Iraqi security force. I think what we will see by the end of this coming summer is a drawdown of probably a third of the U.S. forces in country. Win, lose, or draw, the U.S. Army and Marine Corps are incapable of maintaining the current deployment posture. So we're sort of stuck there. We're losing a battalion a month killed and wounded of soldiers and Marines. We've got to go forward, and we really don't have many options. The one we've selected is likely to work.
Are you concerned, as some are, that we'll create civil war by moving out too fast?
Oh, sure. Well, I mean, there's a civil war going on right now. There's really three battles going on in Iraq. One that bothers the Iraqis intensely is a level of criminality and corruption that's simply staggering. Day-to-day extortion, robbery, abduction, rape of your school children. Then there's this foreign extremist, which I think has been set up as the principal challenge by Secretary Rumsfeld and others. I don't see it that way. 200-300 foreign extremists a month show up in Iraq. They're dead within 2 weeks. They're not much of a threat to the U.S. armed forces. They go after civilians. They go after the police. They're almost helping consolidate some form of Iraqi government. And then finally, we got this low-grade civil war, which is unlikely to be solved by either the U.S. military or, as Professor Posen suggests, by some loose federal structure. But I do believe it's possible. Let's say by the end of next summer, 250,000 Iraqi security forces. Let's assume half of them are modestly effective and that they'll fight for their province. So if we keep, by the end of next summer, if we've got two or three U.S. Army and Marine divisions there, we can probably maintain The government in power in Baghdad, which is a huge problem, it's a mixed city, vital city, and then we can, you know, maintain spoiling attacks in the insurrection zone of Anbar province, etc. So the situation is not hopeless, but we have so little credibility in the administration right now on based on their past public utterances on the war that we got a credibility problem in the American people.
General John Vines, who oversees day-to-day operations in Iraq, thinks that under certain conditions, U.S. forces in Iraq could drop to under 100,000 by the end of 2006. So even the guy on the ground thinks that we could slowly get out. Let's bring On Point listeners to the conversation now. 1-800-423-TALK. William is calling from Columbia, South Carolina. Hi, William.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Go right ahead.
Yes, I would like to pose a couple of questions, but first I'd like to make comment on Dr. Posen's proposal, if I could.
Go right ahead.
If we go to a semi-autonomous states, if you will, eventually, for the Shia and the Kurds and the Baathists, you know, the eventual end of that, the outcome would seem these three separate entities. And then, of course, if you have the Shias in the south aligned with the Shias from Iran, don't we have the possibility of a greater Iranian state that just subsumes the Shia? And then we have not only Iran, but part of Iraq nuclear capable.
Professor Posen.
Well, I mean, this is a widespread fear. Experts on the internal politics of Iraq and in the region will often tell you that in the case of relations between Iraqi Shia and Iranian Shia, that Iraqi nationalism often trumps Shia religion. It's not likely that after living under the thumb of Saddam Hussein for so many years that the first impulse of the 60% of the population of Iraq that's Shia, some 15 million people, is going to be to join up and become subjects of the Iranian state, a group of people who are, in fact, different from them ethnically. So while Iran has certain friends among the Shia community, it's unlikely that they can leverage that friendship to annex some 60% of Iraq.
Gerald McCaffrey, Barry Posen, stand by. I'd like to bring another voice to the conversation now. Major Ben Connable is a foreign area officer in the U.S. Marine Corps, 2nd Marine Expeditionary Force. He was twice deployed in Iraq in 2003 and 2004, scheduled to be deployed again on December 1st to serve 7 months in Iraq. Major Connable, hello, and thanks for joining the program.
Thanks for having me.
Let me ask you, first of all, what do you see in Iraq right now? What do you make of the statement by Congressman Murtha? How do you imagine it affecting the troops on the ground? How's it affected you?
As an active duty military officer, I have to be careful to not respond directly to the congressman. But I would say, in general, statements from officials, government officials and representatives that denigrate the conduct of the war and call for an immediate withdrawal, certainly do hurt morale. And I think that the majority of the professionals in the military, both in the Army and the Marine Corps, whether they want to be there or not, whether they want to leave their families at home or not, certainly agree that we need to stick around and provide stability so the Iraqi government can form successfully.
Are you worried about diminishing public and or political support for the mission?
Now, that's an ongoing concern. Speaking regularly with all of my colleagues, we find it very difficult to watch the news. We've invested, not only the officers and the Marines, but a lot of other folks have invested a tremendous amount of effort, personal sacrifice, into providing the Iraqis some kind of stability. And I think we see a horizon that goes a little bit beyond what Mr. Posen brought up. I think this has been a very well-reasoned debate, and I hope a lot of people are listening. But if you pin a timeline down, we're going to have some significant problems. We are going to slowly withdraw American troops, but only as the Iraqis are ready to go, and they're not ready right now.
How is morale among the U.S. troops?
Well, I can only speak for the Marines out in Al Anbar province. It's outstanding. I mean, the Marine Corps had no problem enlisting a number of folks that needed last month. Our retention rates are fine. Marines certainly don't want to leave their families behind, but a lot of Marines love what they do over there, and they feel a moral responsibility to the Iraqi people and to the Iraqi government to give them a chance to stand up successfully.
Two tours there. Do you think that from what you've been able to see, the Iraqis you've talked to, the Iraqis you've worked with, that the conversation about getting out might spread dismay among those Iraqis who want us to stay?
Yeah, of course, whenever you're talking about the viewpoints of the Iraqi people, it's always a very complex discussion. But, what you get publicly and what you hear privately are two very different things. Publicly, we get a lot of statements from sheikhs that I know, from government officials that I know, calling for the withdrawal from cities like Ramadi and Fallujah. And then you get them on a sidebar, and they beg you, please, for whatever you do, don't pull out. It certainly will spread some dismay, but more importantly, it certainly gives comfort to folks like Zarqawi and some of the Ba'athist leaders that eventually we are not going to be able to stay the course.
General Webster, commander of the 3rd Infantry, has said that getting out would be a recipe for disaster. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, if we don't give the Iraqi army a chance to really stand up, and I think C-plus is probably shooting a little low, they're not capable right now. You can't on one hand say that the war is an utter disaster, and then the other hand say we're ready to leave, and then the Iraqis will be more than capable of taking over. They need a lot of work. They need American fire support. They need American logistics support in the short term. And in the long term, we are going to have an advisor presence there. That doesn't mean we can't slowly start standing down some of our forces.
Well, then what is it that members of Congress and, as you've noted, a growing segment of the U.S. population, what are they not getting about what's happening in Iraq?
I think there's just an unwillingness to listen to the quiet professional that, the guys like the general you just quoted that are saying, this is going to take some time. I think that there's a false expectation, you can debate how that was set, but I mean, there was a false expectation that this was going to be quick and easy amongst the American people, and I think the military professionals and the government professionals understand that this is going to take a little bit longer, and that false expectation has set the stage for the debate that we're seeing today.
Major Ben Conable, U.S. Marines, about to be deployed to Iraq again for his third tour on December 1st. Thanks a lot for joining us. And Major, I'm sure speaking for all of us, be safe.
Thank you very much. I will.
Major Ben Conable. Barry Posen, back to you here in the studio. I know you were looking to respond to some of the things that the Major had to say.
Well, I think we need to return to one of the points that Congressman Murtha made that that were not picked up on very much by the media. I think Congressman Murtha said that disengaging U.S. forces is not something that comes after success. Disengaging U.S. forces is part of the solution. And there's two reasons for that. Congressman Murtha offered the reasons, but he took those reasons, interestingly, from General Casey, who's the four-star in command in Iraq. There's two points here. One, the very large American force in Iraq is seen by at least some Iraqis, mostly the Sunni majority that seems to be supporting the resistance, as an occupation force. And in the Arab world, there's almost no stronger way to mobilize violent political opposition than to appear as the occupier. And in his testimony on September 29th, General Casey himself said that we should be drawing down U.S. troops in part to lose this image of occupier, because this image of occupier is what stokes nationalism, and nationalism is a powerful political force in the modern world, and particularly in the Arab world. That's point one. The second point, and General Casey also made this point, and Congressman Murtha makes this point, and some of it was even embedded in some of the remarks that the Major just made. The continuing presence of U.S. forces enveloping the nascent Iraqi forces with American command and control, American fire support, American advice, American tactical and strategic reserves infantilizes this force. It makes them persistently dependent on the Americans. And the argument that we can't get out until we replace all these magical things that the American military brings to the Iraqi forces is essentially an argument that means the Americans will have to stay there more or less on an open-ended basis, because Saddam could not create a Western army, a Western high-tech army. So in addition to the task of trying to create a liberal, democratic, multi-ethnic society and government in Iraq, it sounds like that the standard for the Iraqi military is that somehow it's got to be made over as a mirror image of a Western military. This is an impossible task. We need to be working with the Iraqi military to teach them how to work without us, with the kinds of weapons and capacities that they're likely to have and that they're likely to master.
Well, but with those capacities that they're likely to have and likely to master, will they be able to keep control of their country?
They'll be able to, again, remember my definition of keep control, right? what I want this military to be able to do is to be able to defend the Shiite parts of Iraq, including Baghdad, which is a mixed city, from the possibility of a Ba'athist return or an al-Qaeda victory. Defending the borders of the country has to be someone else's business. It has to be the business of the United States, the business of the Europeans, and the business of other regional actors.
Barry Posen, Barry McCaffrey, please stay with us. We'll continue the program after the break. I'm Bob Oak, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Support for On Point comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston. Bicon Dental Implants, offering short implants that can eliminate the need for bone grafting. Information is available at Bicon.com, B-I-C-O-N.com. And Private Wealth Management at Babson Capital, for more than 60 years helping clients build and preserve wealth through financial planning, investment management, and trust services. In Cambridge and on the web at BabsonCapital.com.
This is On Point. I'm Bob Oak, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about the debate over whether to withdraw U.S. troops from Iraq. Congressman John Murtha called for pulling out troops in 6 months. The White House says the U.S. must stay the course. Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld on Fox News Sunday turned to history to explain the Bush administration's position.
Winston Churchill said something to the effect that the problem is not winning the war, but persuading people to let you win it. Winston Churchill said that about World War II. So this is not new. This is a fair debate and a fair discussion.
Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld. We're joined this hour from Seattle by General Barry McCaffrey, former Commander-in-Chief of the U.S. Armed Forces Southern Command and a Vietnam and Gulf War veteran. With us in the studio, Barry Posen, political science professor at MIT, where he's affiliated with the Security Studies Program. You can join the conversation. We're at 1-800-423-TALK. That's 1-800-423-8255. General McCaffrey, isn't part of the problem the White House faces when President Bush or Defense Secretary Rumsfeld say stay the course, the lack of an explanation of what the course is?
Sure. I think a lot of it's been a complete lack of credibility in the part, in particular the Pentagon civilian leadership, who have from the start of this operation consistently and increasingly in my mind misportrayed what's going on the ground. There's been a denial of the evidence in front of their eyes. It's been a real challenge, I think, to the military leadership, who had to get at the truth to craft a strategy that's likely to work. By the way, a quick comment, if I may, Bob. You know, that Major Ben Knobble headed out to Iraq on his third tour. Quick insight, his reasoned, courageous viewpoints, putting his own life at risk, are an example of the enormous competence of the military force we've deployed into Iraq and Afghanistan and around the world fighting this effort. You know, as a student of the armed forces and as a career officer, I don't think we've ever had a more courageous, effective, flexible military force in our country's history. And God knows they've stood up to the enormous sacrifice in a unit and personal level. But I think you know, your comments about stay the course are quite correct. It's lent itself to the kind of frustration that we see in the part of Congressman Murtha. By the way, sort of in aside, Murtha's comments can do some good. It seems to me that that will also be listened to among Shia political leadership, and perhaps in some ways energize themselves to more responsible policy positions. Their leadership has been fractured, ineffective. They're fighting among themselves. There has been enormous corruption inside the interim series of governments we've had in place, the upshot of which is not only calling into question the effectiveness of their system of governance, but also could turn off the American people and prevent Congress from providing the resources they're going to need in the coming years. So I'm not sure that Congressman Murtha's public stance may not do considerable good on both sides of the aisle.
Well, let me a quick question here before we go back to On Point listeners waiting to speak to you both. What can the vice president, what can members of the administration, what can the president say at this point to turn public opinion? Can he say anything, General McCaffrey?
Well, I think so. I think one thing you do, and we're starting to see it, yesterday, we can stop vilifying opposition critics. I think there is a legitimate, certainly is a legitimate different viewpoint on the way we got into the war. It was a war of choice. Many people, Senator Graham from Florida had a very different viewpoint on it, Wes Clark and others. And now I think those that are trying to put constraints upon Pentagon leadership, the opposition, for example, on this torture policy is intense, and I certainly align myself with the those who want to support the Senator McCain's well-thought-out constraint upon military and CIA policy. So we got to stop vilifying our opponents and stay on point on what is the policy that we're that we should pursue, and that policy clearly will involve sacrifice on the part of the armed forces and the American people. So we got to get a substantive debate going and a little more civility in our political discourse.
And quickly to Barry Posen, the Defense Secretary Rumsfeld, in that soundbite we heard, tried to make the point that Winston Churchill understood he needed to win the public relations battle. Can the White House win the public relations battle? What should it do?
Well, this White House in the past has been very adept at public relations, but on this war, they've been awful, and it's just not clear to me what they could do at this point. I think digging themselves out of this hole does begin with honesty, and that means honesty about both benefits and costs. In the past, they've tried to win these arguments by hyperbole, and they've argued things that are not inherently persuasive to the American people. The continued effort to merge together in the public mind the war in Iraq with the global war on terror, and failure in the war in Iraq with future terrorist attacks on the United States. There probably are some connections between the war in Iraq and future terrorist attacks on the United States, but they're not the ones the administration wants to admit. It's pretty clear that Iraq has turned into a kind of Darwinian school for international terror, and as General McCaffrey pointed out, 200 people a month go there, and 190 of them die. The other 10 become professionals, and one or two of those go home, and it doesn't take many of them to go home to become the cadre for new al-Qaeda networks. It's very clear that al-Qaeda in Mesopotamia, al-Qaeda in Saudi Arabia, al-Qaeda across North Africa has rebuilt itself on the strength of popular opposition to the American position in Iraq. So this war is not doing any good in the global war on terror, and it would be a good idea if the Bush administration stopped trying to argue that.
To On Point listeners, 1-800-423-TALK. Marjorie is calling from Milton, Massachusetts. Hi, Marjorie.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Go right ahead.
Because I agree with Mr. Posner about occupiers and all of that, it does seem as though our troops are providing a lot of the fuel for continuing and increasing this whole war situation. We have, by the end of this year, and by the end of next year, we will have provided the framework for a democratic system, which is one of the things we apparently have gone in to do, to make Iraq democratic. But how can we ensure that all the compromise, the trust, and the tolerance necessary for a true democracy will happen without occupying the place for years and years and years? Because there's such a division among us about getting out and not getting out, I would like to propose this, and I'd love to have your comments on it, a kind of Iraqi Marshall Plan. Instead of spending billions for war and watching our soldiers blow up, instead of impoverishing and killing the Iraqi population, let us take some of the billions spent on the military after they're out and create an Iraqi fund administered by a coalition of friends and allies. Let us consider this fund as a grant for Iraqis to tap into to bolster their own businesses, their own infrastructure and help, and to choose their own experts and their contractors.
All right.
Because one military expert says, if a man especially, has a full stomach and has a job, he's not going to want to be an insurgent. He will be too tired.
All right. Let's have General McCaffrey weigh in here. A Marshall Plan for Iraq.
Well, I think it's quite sound thinking. We've already put $18 billion of economic reconstruction aid on the table. Another billion, a huge drop, is scheduled to come. It's been very difficult to get the economic jump start to the country going, given the security situation. So, and by the way, our allies are scant on this issue, trying to bring in particularly the Arab neighbors to poor, suffering Iraq, the Saudis, the Kuwaitis, and others, to ante up to make this a success has been quite difficult. So, you know, when you look at the six neighbors to Iraq, all of them, to one degree or another, are not supporting creating a viable, strong rule of law Iraqi state. So I think Marjorie's points are sound. That's the direction we should move as we actually create this loose federal structure that Professor Posen talks to, and as we create Iraqi security forces, as we withdraw U.S. military forces, all of which I hope are going to occur in the coming 24 months or so, I think her ideas are quite sound.
Marjorie, thank you very much. Your turn now. Call us, 1-800-423-8255. Keith is dialing from Nashville. Hi, Keith.
Hi.
Go right ahead.
I just was wondering, if the Iraqis are going to have elections, what about having a proposition on the ballot to allow the Iraqi people to choose whether American forces stay or leave?
Barry Posen, practical, not practical?
I think there's a good many people who are afraid what the answer would be. I mean, you know, whether you believe polls in the United States or in Iraq or not, the U.S. government and the British have been commissioning polls in Iraq for the last year or two. And to the extent that you believe what these polls tell you, 60 or 70% of Iraqis are tired of the occupation, would like to see it end, and would like to see it end soon. I think people are afraid that if such an initiative were on the ballot, it might get majority support, and then the leaders would then lose control of the disengagement process, both the Iraqi leaders and the American leaders. So I'm guessing that it's not that this proposal couldn't be attempted. I think there's probably a lot of concern about what the answer would be.
Keith, thanks. Another On Point listener now, Stephen's dialing from Boston. Hello, Stephen.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Go right ahead.
On this notion of whether or not the Iraqi people want us there, it kind of depends on the context of the question and when and where you ask an Iraqi this question. I spent a year there as an advisor with the United States Army, and what I learned about Iraqis is that they tend to be in this perpetual survival mode. They've been in this mode for a long time. In fact, Major Ben Connable, one of your guests earlier, wrote a great paper that should be required reading for anyone trying to understand Iraqis, called Marines Are from Mars and Iraqis Are from Venus, where he describes sort of the Iraqi mindset. This is a country that has been conquered on many occasions, and pretty much historically conquerors come and conquerors go, leaving the Iraqi people to hold the bag. And I think that's kind of their perception of the Americans. They really think that, well, you know, you're just going to come in here, do your thing, and you're going to leave. We'd rather you left sooner rather than later so that we can make our deals and our negotiations with whoever is going to be holding power, whether that's the terrorists, whether it's a government, whether it's a military. They would rather we just got out of the way. But at the end of the day, if you talk to them in quiet personal conversation, they're very grateful that we're there because they're learning a great deal from us. They, through the years of Saddam, were never really able to develop professionally. Civil servants, military professionals, these guys never really developed because Saddam pretty much held all the power to himself. So now that they're having to run themselves, They have some talent, they have some desire, but they really just lack the institutional knowledge and experience, and they are getting that from us.
Stephen, do you think the Iraqis have confidence in their future?
Well, that's an interesting point because, as Major Connable points out in his paper, the Iraqis don't envision future, and this is something that these calls for pullouts reinforce. They have difficulty envisioning any kind of a future, let alone a democratic one, and when the major protagonist for their democracy has all this trouble at home and they're going to pull out very rapidly, well, why should they even dream about a future then? Then it's just back to business as usual, making deals with whoever has the most guns. It's a depressing thought for them.
Barry Posen, if there's no Iraqi national psyche, no positive psyche, won't pulling out lead to even if it's over 18 months, lead to the possibility of just chaos?
Well, I think that disengagement of U.S. forces from Iraq will almost surely allow the nascent civil war that's already underway to intensify. And I'm going to say something here that's really quite unpopular. I sort of think that has to happen. You have a problem in Iraq with reaching deals, and the problem is this. The Shia and the Kurds don't want to offer much to the Sunnis because we're holding the bag for them. We're defending them. We're defending their right to assert control over this country, and they're not paying a particularly large share of the cost to do that. And the flip side is that the Sunnis don't believe that they've lost power in any kind of an honest fight. They believe that the Americans were the agents of their fall from power. So in a very tragic sense, these three groups have to start learning to live together without our tutelage so that they measure their relative power and their relative will so they begin to understand what kinds of compromises they're going to have to make if they want to have a reasonable future. And the fact that the Americans are running the war in the country actually gets in the way of the tragically constructive fighting that has to happen.
I have to say, when I listen to you say that, I wonder if what we would eventually end up with, if the Posen plan, so to speak, was put into place, is the Iraqi version of Vietnam. You know, the Iraqi version of peace with honor, we get out.
Well, I'm not sure what the Iraqi version of Vietnam means. What you have to remember about Vietnam, and General McCaffrey can remind you, is that there was a North and there was a South, and the North was very heavily armed with conventional weapons. And the departure of United States forces, after having infantilized the South Vietnamese Army forces, left that force vulnerable to conquest from without from an organized military. Now, there isn't an organized military on the boundaries of Iraq waiting to come in and conquer the country when we leave. Now, that's an important difference.
Barry McCaffrey, we have about a minute left, and you have it for the last word.
Well, I agree with Professor Posen's analysis. The one thing I would caution us, though, is that the Sunnis have brutalized Iraq for a long time now. There's a good argument that Saddam and his regime probably kill somewhere between 1 and 2 million of them in wars and internal savagery. If magically we whisked all coalition U.S. forces out of Iraq tonight, in my judgment, a year from now, the Sunnis would be back in control. And so although there isn't an external threat poised to recontrol Iraq, they had the generals, the intelligence officers, the Ba'athist Party leadership. We've got to make sure we leave that country, and again, I think Professor Posen's characterization is correct, some loose federal structure, some notion of the rule of law, and security forces that can largely protect the Shia and the Kurds from the Sunni reestablishing themselves. That's likely to happen. I actually think we're going to pull this off, but it's going to be a close thing.
General Barry McCaffrey, Professor Barry Posen, thank you very much. That's On Point for this hour. I'm Bob Oakes, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook, and again, this is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.